Mr. Servino.
Yes, how are you?
I'm good. This is Cameron Meyer with the Orlando Weekly. How are you?
Cameron.
It's nice to talk to you. Thank you so much for speaking with me today. It's an honor to talk to you. First, I'd like to start by talking about your film, Last I Heard, which of course will be screening at the upcoming Florida Film Festival. I just saw it and I enjoyed your performance very much.
Thank you.
It sort of seems like a role you were born to play in a way, considering how many roles you've had on both sides of the law. Of course, in this one, you're playing a former mob boss who has just been released from prison. Can you tell me a little bit about how you got involved with the project?
Well, my son knew the director, Dave, and I was in a, then we were in a movie together that he sort of directed called Mineville. And my son, myself, and Dave Rodriguez, the director, David Rodriguez, the writer-director of Last I Heard, we became friendly, and I really liked his directing style, and I liked him. And my son Michael said, you know, Dad, this is a very good script. I've read it. You really ought to read it. So I read it, and as soon as I read it, I knew that this would be a very, very good role for me. You know, most people think I'm either a gangster or a cop or something. The reality is I'm a sculptor, a painter, a best-selling author, many, many things, a poet, an opera singer, but none of them is gangster. But, you know, obviously I sort of have a knack for playing these things. And but more than that, more than the identity, more than the category gangster, was the heart that was in it and the reality. And so just as soon as I read the script, in tears, I called Dave and I said, let's do this. And that's how it came about.
Do you get annoyed at that stereotype? I mean, you point out that you're a very...
I mean, it's almost my later goal in life to disabuse people of the notion that I'm a slow-moving, heavy-lidded thug. and most people's impression of me is that because of the success of Goodfellas and a few other things, but they forget that I was also Dr. Kissinger in Nixon, and they forget that I was the deaf lawyer in Dummy, and they forget a lot of things that I've done. Because I put on a persona completely different from myself in almost every role I do. So they take me for what they've seen me in the roles, and not as I actually am, which is all right. It's a sort of testament to my knack for doing this, okay, rather than a criticism. But it would be nice to have my legacy more than that of just tough guy.
Of course, and I do want to talk to you about things not related to that persona. Before I do, though, I do want to mention, of course, that you'll be at the Florida Film Festival this year for a special screening of Goodfellas as well. And I've heard that when the film first came out, you weren't not a big fan, necessarily. And
that's for the first 3 hours.
Okay.
But I was blown away by it, and my natural critical eye was damaged because of the effect the movie had on me. And I thought it was excessively violent, boring, and I was boring in it. And, you know, people around me were telling me, this is one of the best things you've been in and one of the best things you've done, and et cetera, et cetera. And about 3 hours later, somehow, I don't know how, I came out of the haze that the movie had put me in, semi-comatose, and was looking at it in reality and thinking about it and saying, wait a minute, I think I've just seen a great movie, and I think you're good in it. So that's how it came about.
Did it take a second viewing of the film, or you just needed to come out of that initial...
To me, coming to my senses, it's as if I'd gotten a concussion and, kind of rebounded after about 3 hours.
Yeah, the movie can have that effect on you. I look forward to seeing it again at the Enzian when it screens at the festival.
It's one of the greatest movies in the history of cinema, in my opinion.
Speaking of great movies and great directors, you've had the privilege of working with some great directors in the history of motion pictures, and you yourself are a director.
Yes.
You've worked with Martin Scorsese, of course, on Goodfellas.
Yes.
Warren Beatty, I believe, at least twice on Reds and Dick Tracy.
Wonderful director.
Sidney Pollack, The Firm, Oliver Stone, Nixon. Can you talk a little bit about or contrast their directing styles and maybe tell me a little bit about your own directing style?
Well, everybody is different. Some directors go don't know what acting is really all about, and so they ask for results. You know, you ought to cry here, or you have to laugh here, or you're sad here. You know, they talk in those terms. And, of course, it's up to the actor to translate that into his own lexicon, his own technical formulations. So if he says, cry here, well, then I know what he means. I have to go into something where that gives me, I go to the pinch that gives me that ouch. But, of course, after you're doing it as long as I have, you kind of send for things and they come. The pathways are well established. The road map and the roads are in good order for you to come up with the emotional conditions you need. Now, as far as the polar opposite of that is Scorsese. And Scorsese is a man who essentially creates such a nurturant atmosphere and encourages improvisation. Goodfellas is at least 30 to 40% improvised.
I see.
And what it does when you do that, you see, if you're the only way you can make something appear or sound or feel like it's not been learned so that it's absolutely true is if you put it into your own words or you have a long time to prepare, as in a play. You have weeks and weeks of rehearsal. But if you just learned the lines last night or this morning, it's difficult to give it the reality that you would give it if you had more time. Now, when you've been doing it as long as I have, you can shortcut that. So you just, there's so much technique you acquire after you do it, if you do it well. I mean, assuming you're doing it well. And not everybody does it well.
Yes.
The people who do it well are a small number. But if you do it well, then you get better as you get older, and you get more and more experience, and that piles on in an organic way. So you don't need the time, the coaching, the rehearsal that others might need if they're younger or just are not as technically advanced. So I can work with any kind of director. The only thing that I really hope the director has is taste. He can speak any language, including Urdu, if he wants to, as long as he transmits to me the idea of what the scene should be about. I mean, I pretty much know when I read it, but it's his job and his vision that has to be followed. We don't sign on as directors. We sign on as collaborators in the best sense, or as pawns in the other fellow's chess game. And we are craftsmen in movies. We're not artists. Artistry is definable as an autonomous practice. And certainly that is not the profession of movie acting. You do as you're told. You supply bits and pieces. That is, you supply tiles to the mosaic maker, and lo and behold, 2 or 3 months later, you see a mosaic. It's kind of like you give him the bricks, and 6 months later, you drive by and see the building. Wow. But the artist in movies is the director.
That's a nice metaphor.
Good collaborators if they're good, yeah. And if they're wise. So as a director, I take off my director's hat when I go to work as an actor. But that doesn't mean that I'm, you know, to be pushed about mm-hmm. as if I were some kind of a chess piece.
Have you been pushed about on movies before?
I tried that. No, that's never happened. People have tried that, but early on I got the reputation of being someone who wouldn't violate any truthful precepts that are part of his makeup.
Yeah.
And so I... early on in my career, people thought I was difficult because I would only do things that were real. And I, in point of fact, the younger directors now and all the directors I've worked with in the last 10 years understand and look to me for help because they know that there is no power, money, or influence that could make me do something that breaks a law within myself, that breaks, that destroys the reality. I just won't do it. And early on, that was seen as combative. Now it's seen as a character. So it's seen as someone with principles and someone who can help them. So the younger directors I've worked with all are just very happy to work with me again, and I'm happy to work with them. I've come to understand and enjoy my movie career much more because it took me a long time, you know, because I'm a sculptor, I'm a painter, I'm a poet, I'm a writer, I'm many things that have their own autonomy. But once I recognized that movie acting is a job, and a better job than heavy lifting, which I did in my youth, then you can start to enjoy the parts of it that are fun. You don't have to take on the responsibilities of leading this wagon train across the prairie.
Yes.
You can just be one of the drivers, and they say, we're going this way. Okay, here I go. And it then can become a good job. It can become fun, as long as you have other things that give you the satisfaction of primary art. And in that, this case, that's sculpting and writing. You know, I'm writing my memoirs now. And I've written a best-selling book in 85, so, and I was a rather prominent copywriter in the ad business in my 20s. So, vice president, creative director of an ad agency. So, if you have other outlets, it makes it much easier to be a movie actor, based on the assumption that you like being a primary artist. You can do it if you have other outlets to help you. For instance, if acting on stage is an art, acting in films is a craft.
I see. What the turning point for you to enjoy movie making more, was it becoming a sculptor, a writer on other projects? Was that kind of the turning point in your own mind?
That helped enormously because well, let me put it this way. There are certain things I enjoyed very much right at the beginning of my career because I was lucky enough to have good directors and people who created a nice atmosphere to work in. So that was enjoyable, but more often than not, it was not, because it was people who were either inexperienced or didactic or tyrannical. And so you say to yourself, what the hell am I doing here? And I was champing at the bit. Now, I guess in the last 20 years or so, maybe even a little longer, I have understood. And it took a long time. You know, I made 25 years of career before I got to that point.
I see.
And it's my fault. It's nobody else's. But it's made my life a lot more enjoyable.
Well, it's interesting that you mention your sculpture. I before I became a film critic, or at least while I was not being a film critic, I was the editor of an art magazine called Sunshine Artist, and we ran a small article about your sculpting.
You have a picture of me on the front?
We didn't have a picture of you on the front of the magazine, but we had a feature article about celebrities who are not known for...
Yeah, I remember that.
Oh, great.
Yeah, I do.
Great. It was such a privilege to run that article because I think it opened people's eyes to...
I appreciate that.
You're so welcome. It really opened people's eyes to, you know, this guy's a movie star, this guy's a playwright, but they're much more than that. They do other things in the visual arts.
Yeah.
So I'm glad we had a chance to do that.
Thank you.
One other question, a little bit more personal, not related to movies. I know that you're active in animal rights... particularly horse...
I have been, yes. Not at the moment so much, but I have been in the past.
Particularly horse rescue efforts.
I was involved in that, yes.
Is that still something that you're pursuing? That's something that's
not
actually
really, because
close
that's
to my heart.
My daughter does. Essentially, I financed it, you know, and I did some... I went to Washington, I did some things, you know, I've done what I can do and put in a couple of million dollars to it, and that's a lot of money. And a lot of time, and I thought that my time would be best served by improving my work and by better providing for my family.
Is it still something that you follow, the fight to end horse slaughter?
Really, I mean, it comes across my purview reading the paper, but it's not something I'm actively involved in anymore, no.
I
still certainly, I mean, like the killing of the Mustangs is very disturbing, Yeah, and what really is disturbing is when you think about how 37% of the horses you see at the racetracks are end up in slaughterhouses. If they don't run fast enough, they're dead.
I know.
Of course, we know that about greyhounds. We know that about, you know, and it seems like a bad system to me.
I agree. I agree.
Better take them out in the prairie, let them run around, and let give them a chance to live, you know?
Yeah.
But a horse is worth $600 to an owner. To the meat man,
yeah.
Who has his truck right at the track.
Yeah, it's a disturbing thing. So thank you for your work with that.
I think, to tell you the truth, I couldn't remain in it because it was too disturbing.
Yeah.
And there are other things that I am involved with, like my asthma foundation, which is very dear to me. And I just revised the book I wrote in 1985 called How to Become a Former Asthmatic. And that's going on my website next week with a video that should be up in a couple of weeks and the Sorvino Asthma Foundation website. And those are things that I've got to put my attention to now.
Okay. Is there any...
I had to make a choice. You can't do everything. So my choice had to be trying to rid the world of asthma. You know, as I cured my son and I cured myself and maybe tens of thousands of others, that on a scale, that outweighed the necessity to stay in the horse rescue business.
Oh, I understand. I guess my last question is, are there any other upcoming projects, either film or non-film, that you would like to mention?
Well, I've done about 8 or 10 movies in the last year, and they'll be coming out. Some of them will be big and some small. One is one with Nick Jonas, one of the Jonas brothers, called Careful What You Wish For. I think that's a really good movie. Another one's called The Bronx Bull, which is another story, another part of the life of Jake LaMotta, the boxing champion.
Oh, of course.
And also now, I'm doing a film this week called The Executor. This coming up a week and a half or 2 weeks. And so I'm doing that, and I'm doing, we've got a comedy coming out called Hybrids. There's a lot of stuff I've done. And what I'm going to do now in New York, I'm going to do a reading at the Barrow Theater for the small company called Shrunken Shakespeare as a fundraiser for them, where I'm going to put on my production of King Lear, which will be directed, it's almost a stage reading. It's a reading, but everyone will know their lines, and it will have been directed by me and starring me.
Okay.
So this has been a pet project of mine for a long time. I want to do it as a movie, and I'd like to do it as a play as well.
That sounds exciting.
It's now called Lear. It's about the robber barons of 1905, and it's kind of like Cornelius Lear and J.P. Gloucester and the very rich people of that time in Newport, Rhode Island.
Does this mean you'll be returning to the stage in other productions?
Yes, it will. If this goes on to do, I may do it in L.A., I'm not sure. I've had an offer to do the play in L.A., and of course I want to do the movie, but stage is always the first choice, but you can't make a living at it. But stage is always preferable because it takes everything you've got. Where movies kind of discharge the battery, it's like making, you're like a master ceramics maker when you're a movie actor. When you're a stage actor, you're just a master. it's different.
Yes.
So, yeah, there's a play I want to do called Johnny on the Pony, which we're going to have a reading of at the Edgemar Center in Los Angeles, Santa Monica, in May. You know, the stage project that I want to do, because I love the stage, you know, I have a big voice, and rather well versed as a speaker and as an actor on stage.
You started more on the stage.
I look to that when I can. Of course, I have an active movie career, and I certainly don't want to abandon that. Mm-hmm. But I want to intersperse it with the really fine stage projects.
Well, you started more on the stage before Panic in Needle Park and those days. You were more of a stage actor, weren't you?
I was. Uh-huh. I was. And that was great training. I mean, it's fantastic. That was where you... That's as the late Robert Culp said. We did a movie together called Most Wanted. Really fine guy. He said, "This is a trade, Paul, and you learn it on the stage." We were conversing about what it meant because there was a kid in the movie who really didn't know what the hell he was doing, and we were just saying he doesn't know. And he said, "Paul, as you know, it's a trade, and you learn it on the stage." And it's kind of you. Without learning on the stage, it's difficult to learn how to act out loud. For instance, I'm noticing that on television and in movies now, it's more difficult to understand the actors because they have such powerful microphones now that you can pick up speech even at a mumbling or whispered level. Unfortunately, that means that most of the actors don't feel they have to act on that. They so loud, you miss a lot like that. Kids say, "What did he say? What?" And I'm not the only one who feels this way. A lot of people, at least we call it acting out loud. You have to learn how to act out loud.
Yes.
And that's a skill that you pretty much learn on the stage. You don't have to learn it in film, so you don't. Of course, the great masters like like Al Pacino and Bobby De Niro, they know what they're doing. And they've both done stage. They're both extremely experienced. And of course, Al returns to stage whenever he can.
Yes.
So that's where you learn it. And that's if I have a complaint about the modern actors, it's that they're not well enough prepared, and there are not a lot of actors who want to be great actors, and that's disturbing to me. I know when I started, everybody was influenced by Brando, and that whole wave of great actors, Brando and Benny Gazzara and people like that, actor studio people, all kinds of, and Elia Kazan and so forth,
yeah.
We were influenced by that, and it made us want to be great actors. Yes, we wanted to make a living, be stars if possible, but that was not the goal. The goal was to be a great actor. And that's what we strove for. All the people I knew who were studying in those days wanted to be great at it. I don't get that feeling of young students.
I
get that feeling that they want great careers. But I am not convinced, and other acting teachers have told me this, I'm not convinced that the so-called ethics of the profession are as strong as they once were.
So more people are going for simply success rather than to try to prove an artistic point?
Yeah, exactly. Hmm. I mean, I worked like a dog to get any good at this because it meant something to me. I don't see that kind of commitment in most young actors. I just don't.
What needs to change, do you think?
Well, I don't know if it can change, because if you don't have to act out loud, as I said, in film, why would it change?
Right. Perhaps a greater emphasis on theater first?
Well, yeah, I mean, yes, indeed. You know, even, or good classes. But of course, most of the actors I know, including guys in their 70s, you know, they go to classes. They want to keep their skills up. And, you know, I didn't hear your call because I was playing the piano.
Oh.
Playing a particularly loud passage, and I didn't hear it.
What were you playing? What were you playing?
Trying to become better and better at the piano. I'm a pretty good pianist, but every day I try to get better. Well, the way you do that is you practice over and over. You do the same phrase until it's second nature. Well, that's the way it is with any art. That's the way it is with painting, sculpting, poetry, novel writing, any kind of writing, any kind of whatever you do. It calls for practice and application. I don't see enough of that today. There are some who have it, but it's rarer than it used to be. And I think that's because of television and movies, where you do pieces mostly, you know.
I see. Can I ask what you were playing when I called?
I was playing a Beethoven's Pathetique Sonata.
Ah, good choice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Mr. Servino, I would be happy if this conversation went on an hour, but I know you have other people who want to talk to you, so I think we're going to have to end it there. But it was a real pleasure, and
Thank you.
I look forward to meeting you when you come to the festival.
Good, you'll be there. I look forward to meeting you, too.
Yes, I will be there. It'll be great to meet you in person. Thank you so much.
Does this change your attitude toward me now that you've spoken to me?
Not at all.
Be honest.
No, you are exactly the person that I hoped and thought you would be. Very versatile.
Okay.
Very versatile, easy to talk to, and fascinating to listen to. So.
Wow, how nice of you to say.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, take care.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.